Europe is complicated. What do you do when you have complete control over Hungarian politics? Ruin it all, of course. Previously in Europe, military micro-influencers.
Hello, and welcome to another Previously in Europe. I'm your co-host, Hugh, and I'm here with my other co-host, Kieran.
Wapapazooey, it's time to talk Italy.
Yeah, it is. So this week we're going to discuss, we're going to recheck in on the Italian government and some of the fun stuff they've been up to and what the state of the opposition, the main opposition party in Italy is and why that's not effective and potentially won't be effective for some time. but before then, we're going to do our wonderful nonsense section where we talk about some brief things that we want to discuss that aren't quite big enough to discuss really more at length. So mine is two cases of weird social media related advertising that police and military organizations are doing. The first one has made the rounds a lot more heavily, so people probably noticed this and there's much more uproar about it. But the British Army, which has a significant problem with recruits. So currently their target number of trained troops is 82,000, and they currently have 77,000, which is a pretty big, like, you know, shortfall. And there's also apparently a problem with people dropping out partway through the application process because it's quite, you know, complicated to get through it. Which is generally true of armies in general, but they need to up their recruitment numbers in order to make up for this. And they've targeted millennials in a way which I think if you were to like Google millennial terms and then just put them on a poster next to a young looking military person, you would end up with this.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, you know, like as someone who works in the graphic design space, I can tell you now there's ways of auto-generating images. I would believe these are auto-generated.
Yes, with in this time of deep fakes, etc. and like I personally work in artificial intelligence research, and which this is definitely within the scope of. You could just get like an auto-generated thing, and then just pick the best ones, and just you end up with this. So some examples are snowflakes. Your army needs you and your compassion. That's right. If you care enough about social justice things,
you care about your favorite comedian not masturbating in front of female comedians, then you can join the army.
And specifically, they want you to join the army because they think you'll be more compassionate than the current army.
Which, in fairness, is a problem.
I mean, actually, you know, maybe I shouldn't be derisive of this campaign. Maybe that is the problem. Like, as in, maybe people would like the army more if it was full of, like, conscientious objectors. And
do you know what would have stopped Iraq? Snowflakes.
Yeah, but that's not, like, as in, yes, the invasion of Iraq still would have happened, but potentially there would have been fewer war crimes. Not none. I'm very happy. Very clear. There would have been a lot, but
it's a systemic problem. Once you're in, it's
yeah. But you would potentially have fewer of the instances of like Abu Ghraib kind of style stuff, and you know, mistreatment of like prisoners, etc. Is the thing. Another one that I really enjoy is binge gamers. Your army needs you and your drive. I'm assuming to be drone operators is the only. Any assumption I can make off that, or pilots, I guess, if you
are. I mean, are we just, we're actively just saying now that a lot of these, like, shooting simulators are basically recruitment techniques? Because, yeah. Like, they were heavily utilized in the States as, like, hey, kids, you like Call of Duty? What about that in real life? Here's the real Call of Duty.
Yeah.
The thing the game was named for.
Yeah. And there was, like, I think there was an instance of, like one of the big weapons manufacturers having like a licensing deal with Ubisoft because they need to include their weapons, but it was partly as like that was then used in marketing material for the weapons manufacturer. Anyway, that's beside the point.
That's a whole other episode of the show.
Actually, no, it's not. It's the same kind of. It's like, how do you reach millennials? I know we can sneak it into their media.
Well, there's a lot of this stuff because we miss it because this only airs in like American television as ads rather than anything else. Nothing that usually gets exported. But there's like, there's Join the Army ads where it's basically like the CGI robots from Transformers as well as like some of the characters from Transformers being saved by the US Army. And they're just like, you guys sure are great. Don't you think, Bumblebee?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, Michael Bay.
I wish I could join the army, but robots aren't allowed.
I want to see this ad now. I will find it.
I've probably made it a million times better.
I'll find it and put it in the description to see how much worse it is than Kieran's version. But the other one of these things I want to point out is the Berlin Police Force has a YouTube vlog, which is Einfach Helena, which translates to simply Helena for people who don't speak German, and Einfach was one of the things that Duolingo taught me this week, so I did know that. they've been running a vlog, which is kind of like what's the recruitment process like, etc. Like, you know, what's it like being a police officer in order to encourage women recruits? And again, this isn't necessarily like a like if your argument as a Berlin police force is like maybe there should be more women police officers, I'm like, oh, I don't disagree with that. And like if the British Army is saying that like our officers need to be more compassionate, I'm like, well, I don't disagree with that. if that's your goal, that's fine. I find your social media savvy somewhat lacking, but like also like not bad in kind of weirdly conflicting ways. So I mean, sure.
Yeah. Well, I just cut to that footage of the Berlin, like 30 or so Berlin police officers, like pinning down that one like homeless guy while the rest of the Berlin public throw beer bottles at them for doing this. Maybe you could have stopped that if you joined the Berlin police.
Yeah, I always remember I once got a career talk, but from a guy who worked at Shell. The oil conglomerate, and his argument effectively was like, oh, so it's really awkward at like, you know, drinks with my friends and people are like, oh, what do you do? And I'm like, I work at Shell, and everyone's like, oh yeah, that's gross. And he's just like, but wouldn't you rather like change things from the inside? I feel like that's the Berlin police force is making a better version of that argument. Where they're like, we want to diversify the police force, and what do people like? People like social media vlogs. Couldn't we just make one of those?
Okay, but at the same time, I also feel like the word vlog hasn't been used since David Cameron have one, and we were like, okay, he's ruined this for everyone else.
David Cameron had a vlog?
Yeah, it was called Web Cameron.
What? No, are you making this up?
I'm not. Web Cameron.
Can we do an episode which is just us watching that?
Web Cameron, open brackets, a portmanteau of webcam and Cameron. Close. It was a series of online videos recorded by the British Conservative Party leader David Cameron between 2006 and 2010. Yeah.
But so
well, they were the party of the opposition, and then they immediately stopped that when they weren't.
Yeah, but you know what? That won him an election.
Unless you show me the numbers that say it didn't, it did.
I take back everything negative I've said about these this Berlin police vlog and the British Army recruitment advertisements. I mean, they're solving what I agree is a problem via this vector, which is somewhat ham-fisted, and some of the UK Army recruitment ads aren't good, but you know, the compassion one in particular and the more women in the Berlin police force, all for those two things. That's fine.
But the Web Cameron solved the problem of the Tories not being in government.
Yes, that problem that I envisaged at the time was a big problem and was immediately solved.
Gordon Brown needed to be stopped, the madman.
Yeah, Gordon Brown is not a good public speaker.
No, he is not. And unfortunately, he is Scottish, which means he should not be like close to power. Anyway, I've been watching too much Web Cameron.
Moving on from something which is which I've now convinced myself is objectively good, tell me about something that is objectively bad.
Yes, okay. So one thing that did kind of happen over the like Christmas break that usually during the Christmas New Year's kind of period, it's slow, quite slow. So very little actually happened. Like we were having difficulty finding some news stories, and we did an episode last week where we talked about the European elections rather than current events. But here's something that actually kind of did happen in a European country that we feel like we should talk about. At the moment, there's not much to talk about, but it's worth pointing out to the wider world or whoever listens to this podcast. Hello out there. Hungary have passed a labor reform law, which is oof. Oofa doofa. It is a bad one. So I remember having this explained to me by a Hungarian person what was actually being changed here, and I was just trying to find that corroborated online. And oh, it's bad. So this has caused lots and lots of protests. This was put forward by Fidesz, the current ruling party, and like the entirety of the opposition does not like it. Even the like right-wing opposition in the form of Jobbik, which is a garbage party by all accounts, but you know, is the main opposition in Hungary because Hungary's in a place right now. Rather not like to talk about it, but anyway. Thousands of Hungarians have rallied in response to this law. And what this law does, this law has been dubbed the slave law to kind of give you an indication of the gravity of the situation. What this does is it allows employers to demand their staff work up to an extra 400 hours of overtime a year. What particularly makes this bad, and definitely the worst part, which is really bad because I actually see this left out of a lot of like reports on it, except like it's left out of like, so you know when like things develop in a situation, they have to give a summary of like what caused this. They're leaving it out of this, which is like what I find very like problematic, because if you go to the original report about the bill being introduced, you can find out that you can find this out, but sometimes they don't link to it, and you mightn't think, oh, 400 hours extra overtime is pretty shitty, but like I've heard of worse things. Well, the really bad thing about this is that if you work those extra 400 hours, right, in like 1 year, your payment for that overtime can be delayed by up to 3 years. So you could work an extra 1,200 hours over the period of 3 years and only receive the first 400 extra hours you worked, like after those 1,200 hours have been worked. That's a horrifying situation. The thing that I find kind of funny and nonsensy about this is the stated reason for introducing this law, which is notable anti-immigration party Fidesz said that there's a labor shortage in the country that needs to be fixed. And this was apparently the best way to do it. Hooray.
But so like there is a labor shortage in Hungary in terms of like skilled labor. So like the unemployment rate is very low, and that's because migration out of the country is quite high. And one of the reasons is because of the, you know, gross permanently entrenched rural voting heavy Fidesz party making it uncomfortable for younger people who might have different like social views to the Fidesz party leave the country and go work elsewhere, or just the opportunities are better elsewhere. And like the when they do things like push out the Central European University, for instance. Like that, it like stuff like that is a good example of like if options for higher education are limited and options for employment are therefore limited on top of that, then you would leave, but then you end up with a shortage of like companies that are already there that need to hire people with certain skills. There actually does become a shortage quite quickly of that kind of work. So there is the problem of a lot of employers complaining that we can't run this factory because there aren't people who can operate the machinery in large enough numbers. It's not that we can't run the factory, it's that we don't have the hours, we don't have the number of people to cover the hours. Like the whole idea of like being able to delay payments for up to 3 years thing is a overtime is often in people's contracts paid at a higher rate. So you would then basically say, okay, because you can't hire anyone to fill this post, you could pay your current employees more money and cover it. So overall, your operation costs in the short term become more expensive. I think to me, the idea of the 3 year delayment of payment effectively is saying like, okay, so like we're as the government to prevent you from leaving the country, moving your operation elsewhere where there actually is the people to do the work. Stay here for now. We'll solve by magic means like the labor shortage at some point in the next few years, and you get the work up front for free, and you pay for it later. But then by that time, the labor shortage will be filled, and then it'll just be like a one-off cost, which like doesn't really make sense as a policy because they're not going to fix the labor shortage problem. So the whole cyclical like thing isn't going to work. This is a short-term fix to what is actually a problem. There is like a labor shortage of some form in Hungary, possibly not one that this is a really gross solution to it.
Yes. Oh god. The president recently signed it into law just before Christmas. Even though there was like 10 days of protests, which has been described by Al Jazeera anyway as violent clashes between demonstrators and police in the capital city and other cities.
Yeah, I can see why you'd be angry if the government decided that you work money for free. If they're not even raising your taxes, they're just like giving... That would be like on the same day raising income taxes and giving like a corporation tax relief. It's effectively you're saying like, oh, you get free work, and you're not gonna charge for it. It's like a boon to companies and a fuck you to employees at the same time, which is
I love these these labor law related protests in European countries.
Yes,
it's it's so hot right now.
I think this is like. This is worse than Macron's regressive fuel tax.
Yeah.
I'm taking the strong stance that this is worse.
Yeah, I guess the situation though is that like France definitely has stronger situations than like stronger labor laws and decent protections than like any of the like ex-Warsaw Pact countries, which were like a lot of the things that Macron would consider reforms were done like in these countries on the like eve of 1991, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, to our main topic this evening, speaking of the fall of the Soviet Union, that's slightly related to what I'm going to talk about.
Is it?
Yes, actually.
Okay.
Wait until you hear about this. All right, so we're going to talk... I'm going to talk a little bit about the we're talking about Italy as a whole here, and I'm going to talk about like the opposition party in Italy, the PD, the Democratic Party, which we may have known from the oft-considered Matteo Renzi's party.
Have you considered Matteo Renzi?
Have you considered Matteo Renzi? And this is kind of like my I did a lot of research on the PD, its history. And like what's kind of happening now, because international press is often quite bad at discussing the opposition party when they're in opposition in a country that like that you're not really, unless they do something mad,
yeah,
kind of thing. But like usually we hear about other countries when the current government does something,
yeah, which makes sense.
Yes, yeah, no, totally. That gets high priority. I understand that, but sometimes this can be very interesting and like. Can provide a lot of backdrop about when this party's in power again or why they're not in power right now.
Yeah, and I think it makes when there's a predicted change at an election, it's not like shocking because it's clear how the trajectory's ended up there. You're never in a situation of like, oh, well, we haven't looked at polls in Sweden in a while, but it turns out this far-right party is doing very well in polls. And you're like, well, if you've been following Swedish politics at all, that actually wouldn't be surprising because it's a gradual trajectory thing. It's not a... People suddenly all woke up one day close to the election and were like, you know what?
I'm racist now.
Maybe, well, no, some people definitely did.
That racism disease that swept through the Nordic countries.
It's the cold, Kieran. They can't fend it off in the cold.
That's fair. All right, so I'm going to talk a little bit about the Democratic Party, the PD. So the PD actually has like a... if you've listened to us on the show before, we've kind of talked about how the fact that like the center left throughout Europe kind of fell apart because they weren't really doing left wing things. This often describes like the fall of like Labour in the UK, the fall of left wing party in the Netherlands, as well as like Hollande's party in France as well. We kind of like include Matteo Renzi in that analysis as well, oftentimes. But
I think
we're talking about
jump in. I think to a kind of similar trajectory, as well as like not doing left leaning things and therefore losing like enthusiasm in their left wing base. It's also like losing center credibility because of like things not having gone well, despite them following like very very centrist policies, and or doing some like market reforms, or following like EU requirements for austerity. It's kind of like a cool, so you're selling me like that you're the progressive left party, but then also you do all this like very very centrist stuff that isn't working, and then when it doesn't work, you therefore have lost credibility because you weren't really selling that as your, like, as in the French Socialist Party doesn't sound like they're selling Hollande's government. So then when Hollande's government comes in and does a bunch of stuff people don't like, they're not credible when they turn around and say they're going to do something different this time because people just don't believe them.
Yeah. We kind of threw Renzi's government and the PD into that kind of blanket as well. But like, I went into the origins of the PD, and it is interesting where they kind of come from.
Mm-hmm.
So they come from the Italian Communist Party, the PCI, which was a big party in Italian politics since post-World War II. But the reason they kind of like split apart was because of the fall of the Soviet Union, bringing it back. There was a lot of crisis of confidence in the European left after the fall of the Soviet Union. Similar things happened in other parts of the world, but this caused the PCI to split into several parties in 1991. However, these parties formed a coalition called the Olive Tree and eventually became one party known as the PD, the Democratic Party. The difference this time is they incorporated a lot of like Christian Democratic and like liberal democratic, like centrist parties into the fold.
Yeah.
Turning it into this like weird beast. Speaking of weird beasts, I love this quote I found from Palmiro Togliatti, who was like a former leader of the Communist Party of Italy. He described his party's combination of a Bolshevik tradition and Italian patriotism as like the body of a giraffe, oddly shaped yet functional to a certain purpose.
Ah, the Italians.
Because of this like left tradition and background of like actually coming from the Communist Party, Liga have kind of successfully used this as being like the left has been in control for years, for 20 years. Criticisms of that like statement is, well, they were in coalition with like other forces that forced them not to be very left wing, and then my criticism is they weren't trying to be left wing during that time. For example, Matteo Renzi doesn't actually come from a left wing tradition as a background. He actually came from like one of those Christian Democratic parties that merged into the Democratic Party. He doesn't actually come from any kind of party that's a successor to the Italian Communist Party. Which kind of like leads us to the situation of like what the PD is like now, which is weird. mainly I found out about the regular gatherings they have called Festo de l'Unità, the Festival of Unity. I'm assuming that's what that means. Which is a big kind of like open air event with talks and performances, and it's a, like a big party gathering that happens regularly. Lots of parties do something similar around the continent. The interesting thing about the PD, where it's like very, very quote unquote center left position in the political spectrum, when it's actually quite a centrist party being led by someone who's formerly a Christian Democrat, is that this festival is named for a communist magazine that was founded and run by, for a while, Gramsci, of all people. Mm-hmm. Like, the biggest contributor to, like, European, Italian, communist, Marxist thought.
Uh-huh.
So, this is, like, a weird thing that's happening with the PD, where they're hosting this event in tribute to, like, an Italian communist back when, like, being an Italian communist got you killed. And at the same time, they're hosting talks by, like, South American former Marxist guerrillas.
Uh-huh.
And they're having performances by, like, very left-wing anti-Nazi punk bands, which, that sounds great. But then at the same time, they're also having talks by people who, like, worked for the IMF as budget regulators, specifically in relation to Italian budgets and how much they had to come in and cut the damn things.
Yeah. I think that's kind of like, I don't know. I think I'm growing to have more and more of a problem with, like, big tent parties of this nature, because yes, while, like, it's, I think it's great to have those things happening in the same place, but then having to say, cool, so now a political party has to put forward a manifesto with a unified voice, you end up with the campaign of, like, have you considered Matteo Renzi? Maybe his government wasn't that bad. Because you end up doing the embodying the critique people have of political classes, where you're like, but you're not saying anything. Because you end up having to not, because you've had to caveat in so many bits. So you just say, like, oh, we're gonna reform this like public service, but within the confines of these these budgets that we said we're not gonna change in these ways. And you're like, so you're not gonna do the thing you said. I'm confused what your actual message is now, because you're trying to be two things at once, and not necessarily in a realistic way, but in a way that kind of doesn't convince anyone you're saying anything.
So, like, imagine the Matteo Renzi ads, the Have You Considered Matteo Renzi commercials, except instead of him pulling up in a Vespa, he pulls up in a car, and in the back of the car is that South American former Marxist guerrilla, Gramsci, the guy from the IMF, and the anti-Nazi punk band certainly isn't there, because the IMF guy thought it was too expensive to get a hatchback, but still.
I just think it's like, it's not convincing in the same way as something that speaks with an actual voice and, like, a direction.
Because
you basically end up in a situation where, like, people criticize Salvini for making crazy promises and not following through on them, and then when he's actually in power, he's now taking the tact of, like, oh, I'm willing to make compromises, but these are my actual, like, these are some of the goals we're actually doing, and is accomplishing a lot of the, like, close the ports, I'm not taking any more shit on migrant stuff, and then also making, like, compromises with the EU on their budget. So you're having a strong message isn't necessarily being, like, quote-unquote populist in the, like, I'm making unrealistic promises that are never going to are impossible to come to fruition way, but it can be beneficial. It can be beneficial in a, well, now people know what you stand for, and if it turns out that you need to make compromises along the way, that's fine, because you can make that argument then. But if you go up front saying, like, oh, we've taken advice of, like, people from many different angles, we've come up with this, like, consensus argument, you're like, we're not going to convince anyone that your consensus argument is great, except for the centrist people, and there isn't necessarily enough of them to come out and vote for you.
And also, do they like your consensus-based proposition?
Yeah.
Because of the proposition, or because of the process in which you got there?
Yeah,
like that's also another aspect of it. Because, like, I have a mixed feelings about big tents, but I guess it's kind of like, what is the big tent over? So my issue with, like, PD as a big tent, and I feel like this also probably goes for, like, the Democratic Party in the United States, is that it tries to encompass a lot of ideologies that are, like, actively looking for different things.
Yeah,
like things that are opposed to each other.
Mm-hmm.
Another, like, an example of something that calls itself a big tent organization is the Democratic Socialists of America.
Mm-hmm.
But they have, while they run the gamut of, like, center left to far left, like, anarchists, they have some pretty clear stated goals that they've agreed on. Like, it's not like they've let in Christian Democrats into that and said this will work. It's, I guess it's just like my criticism of the PD as a big tent is that it's, the tent has gotten weird in terms of like who's in it. But like, okay, to kind of move on from this a little bit, is that the kind of the future of this party and like what the speculation is and what the media is talking about. And an interesting kind of figure came up, which is this guy called Niccolo Zingaretti, which is, as I've talked to Hugh off mic, a last name that I desperately want myself. I wonder if I can marry into this family somehow and take their last name.
You're already married.
I'm already married, but I could do it just for the last name and then like leave.
I'm sure your wife will understand that.
I just change my last name. That's really easier.
That's true. That is easier. Just change your last name.
Yeah. So Nicola Zingaretti, who has been called by some Italian newspapers as like a Corbynite figure, as in he has qualities of Jeremy Corbyn from the UK, is interesting because, well, first of all, when they describe him as that, they're not using that as a term of endearment or like, or even any kind of neutrality. They're using it as a slur.
What?
And I can't really seem to find any evidence that he is like that. So he's supposedly more like, he is on the left wing of the PD, and it's worth pointing out that the left wing of the PD as a party establishment is very far removed from the left wing of the PD as in terms of membership. As you heard from the like Gramsci-inspired anti-Nazi Marxist guerrilla festival where the IMF guy is there for some reason. The party establishment and party figures don't seem to actually go that left wing. At least Nicola Zingaretti certainly doesn't. Zingaretti is at the very least a social democrat, a kind of like what the center left is meant to be type of thing. But he's not being very particularly bold about this either. First of all, his reason why there's some buzz around him is he's the mayor of Lazio, which is an important region in Spain. It's the region of Spain that includes Rome. So that's like a, that's an important place to be the mayor of. That's a big, that's a big deal. And Rome isn't cordoned off into its own authority or like state or region or whatever. It's a part of this much larger region. He's the mayor of this region, and at the same time, the reason he's so famous is because he's the only mayor of this region who's been reelected. That was the bar that was cleared. Because they do it in 5-year terms. He's the first person ever to get a second 5-year term in this region. But anyway, his ideas for the party is, well, first of all, he doesn't seem to advocate for any particular policy. He doesn't seem to have any strategy to regain votes from Lega or Five Star Movement, which
I'm listening.
Which you would need to do because they are both dominating the polls. The concerning thing that's happening now is that like Five Star Movement is like gently going down while Lega is gently going up. Lega is still, although we talk about them more, they are the junior coalition partner, mainly because Five Star Movement don't know what the fuck they're doing. Whereas Lega very have much, very clearly have a goal and are very ruthless in achieving that goal. He doesn't have any strategy to regain votes for them because they did lose votes to these parties. More Five Star Movement than Lega, I think, but still. So he also, he's talked about working with the left wing of the Five Star Movement. But most of them have been like exiled or most of them have just been exiled, except for the president of the Congress, who's this kind of like, or it's kind of like a Speaker of the House type figure in Italian politics. And the only reason he hasn't been exiled is because he's popular and he's got a very prominent position. Like, pushing him out of the party or the limelight is going to be very obvious. And he has talked at this Gramsci Fest I was talking. I'm just going to call it Gramsci Fest from now on.
Sure.
He has talked about that. He's spoken at those events before and been received relatively well.
Yeah.
But like I said, the Five Star Movement did make a deal with Lega, mm-hmm. which is often why a lot of the, like, left wing of the party is dying.
Yeah.
Because they're losing their support because they worked with Lega.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, they're losing their support. They're going down in the polls.
Mm.
So working with the Five Star Movement mightn't be the, like, shot in the arm the PD might need. The other thing he talks about, Zingaretti, is being online more.
Uh-huh.
No, that's it. that's his brilliant policy
idea. If his Italian politics doesn't work out for him, he could work for the British Army.
Italian politics needs your compassion and your clicks.
Yeah, so I guess, like, discussing the PD is kind of like a disorganized, currently kind of messageless blob, or giraffe, whichever you prefer.
giraffe is the animal of the evening.
Yeah, and I guess this is a problem because the current Italian government is gross and is continuing to do gross things. Mm. So one thing that's, like, jumped out is, well, so earlier today, was it yesterday? The last couple of days, Walter Ricciardi, the president of the Italian National Health Institute, which is their, like, kind of big health research funding body, has resigned due to the government's endorsements of unscientific positions. The notable unscientific position that has been going on is Giulia Grillo, a Five Star member, who is the current health minister, has been doing...
No relation to Pepe Grillo.
Yeah, which is very...
Founder of the party.
Yeah, not related to Pepe Grillo, as far as we know. The, so, like, as with a lot of movements akin to the Five Star, where, like, direct democracy, kind of just general anti-establishment, but then a we'll figure out our policies as we go kind of thing is, often that gets infiltrated by people who are of the anti-vaccination persuasion. So
the,
like,
correct persuasion.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, go on.
Yeah. So, like, you see in other countries, there's definitely a it's a kind of fringe group that attracts people who are into conspiracy theories, of which, like, anti-vaccination movements is, like, a strong and persistent one. Mm. And unfortunately, their health minister seems to be, like, on this train. So before Christmas, she had a back and forth where initially she said, so previously there was a rule where, to go into school, you had to show vaccination records for your children. And then initially Grillo said that, parents could self-certify and basically just, instead of providing a doctor's note with the saying that they had these vaccines, they could just say they had them. In basically saying, like, you didn't actually have to have them. But then during November, when there was a measles epidemic, because, like, yay, people not getting the MMR, and then there'd be measles outbreaks, they then called for there to be, like, a mass vaccination drive. So there's, like, you know, crazy back and forth around that, basically saying that, like, we don't need vaccines, and then there's an outbreak of the thing the vaccine prevents, and then saying, let's have some more vaccines, but not too many. Salvini also says that there's too many vaccines, by the way. This isn't just a Five Star thing, this is the whole government force. But then also there's a higher health council board, which is basically serves as a 5-year term position, usually occupied mostly by healthcare professionals and academics, as serving as a board that advises the health minister. So Grillo hadn't met with this board once.
Oh, good.
During her term, and then proceeded, and then announced, I believe in November or December, that she was sacking most of them, if not all of them. And she basically just gets to select whoever she wants to put on it, with the comment of some of the people on the board might return to the board. Unclear, but definitely we need to not the leaders of it, and we're definitely gonna, like, have new voices, potentially maybe foreseeing some people who have, you know, anti-vaccine positions, but are technically technically medical doctors, and therefore you can argue they should be on the board, but are really like not well respected in the research community around it. So I think there's like this is the kind of problem you have when you like have a disorganized big tent that saps up votes, both disillusions, and then saps up like some bits of votes from different political persuasions, ending up with like a bad share of the vote for a center left or left leaning or even centrist position, because you are kind of like a distrusted version of all three, and then you end up with the Five Star Movement running the health service.
Yeah, the current state of Italian politics is a fucking... So, okay, I know it's a super common joke in a lot of, like, political spaces to joke about the state of Italian politics in general.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's largely unfair. I think it's for any country, it's probably throwing stones in a glass house type of situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. So,
like, I often found the idea of, like, it was a very common joke in, like, British political spaces to joke about the weirdness of Italian politics. I'm just like, well, you have lords, feck off, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the leader of your country was picked by God. I don't know. Like, this, it's a lot of, yeah. But like, the current situation is, I kind of find it really interesting because the thing that I'm finding the most interesting is, so with the whole vaccine situation with the Five Star Movement, is this is a party that's kind of like doing what some of its membership really wants it to do.
Yeah.
Whereas the issue with the PD is that they have this like huge left tradition and like left membership base that is being completely sidelined to the party's detriment.
Yeah,
I feel like to the party's detriment anyway. And it is interesting because I've heard people make the suggestion, like people in like left circles will talk about like how to bring about, you know, like the left change we want to see, etc., etc. And the whole like success of momentum in the UK is something that's talked about like to great lengths. And I would often like, I think I find it very interesting, but I often think it's like, that works in the UK because of the very specific political structure of the UK and like where Labour was at that point. Because momentum came after Corbyn was elected, which is like something I think a lot of people forget. When Corbyn was made Labour leader, then momentum was founded.
Yeah. It's the same people.
Oh, no, it is the same people, but like...
Yeah,
they weren't organized in like, they were like, oh, he's in charge, let's keep him that way. Like that's more of the, that's kind of how I, yeah.
Yeah, but I think that's a good example of how you still have the problem of, I think this is a indicative problem of like giant mega parties that form enormous big tents. Because like in a lot of ways, for instance, the Conservative Party in the UK isn't a big tent party. It's a very conservative party in a lot of ways and has like a lot of centrist people in it, but it's actually not, the party membership isn't that big in terms of like actual people. Their vote share is, but it's not like reflective in their like on the ground membership. Whereas the Labour Party now has enormous membership of people who like don't agree on a lot of stuff, but there is like majorities for certain things, but that doesn't trickle up to the actual parliamentary version of the party at all. Really, and like some people in Momentum say it does, but like I don't, one they have no power because they're not in government, so like the success of Momentum is like an abstract concept to a certain extent. They haven't had much success in replacing MPs with people they like. The parliament, like their actual parliamentarians, aren't representative of this like left-wing movement inside the giant mega party, and then their leader holds a lot of views that the overall party membership don't like and proceeds to push forward with. So you're actually like, you end up with this problem of like, well, you can't pick up and leave if you're like, oh, me and all of the people I agree with in this party aren't a majority, but because we're a giant mega party, we're a giant big tent party, we've nowhere to go, and because there isn't an alternative to us. And part of the way the UK election system works. But like in Italy, you have a similar problem of the PD is this giant mega party that still has a not insignificant vote share, but they encompass a lot of different parts of the political spectrum, and by doing so are have kind of transitioned into saying nothing other than we thought we were doing a pretty good job before. which is fine, but I mean, people disagreed with you en masse, so I mean, at some point you might have to admit that you were wrong. I don't know, maybe not.
Oh yeah, totally. I should also say that, like, when I say success of momentum, it's more that it's from the perspective of people who wanted to see the Labour Party turn into what momentum has kind of like made it with Corbyn, kind of thing, where they've turned it into, where they've pushed Labour to the left more so than it was before. That's what they deem the success, not necessarily whether he's in power or not.
Yeah.
Although that they would also call that a success, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah. But I view that as a, like, they're perceiving it as a success, but actually they have very little actual agreed on policy that has a majority of their MPs that would agree with it on the cards for even happening. Even if they got into power, they would actually find that they wouldn't have a majority of their own MPs that would vote for a lot of the stuff that they now say that due to having control of the actual leadership of the party have going for them. Whereas you with the giant blob, you still have like a force for something that a lot of the party activists don't like. I think this is very similar to the problem you have in the US with the Democratic Party of you have a lot of freshman congressmen who've just started in Congress who really dislike and disagree with a lot of the people in the party leadership, and they've gotten concessions from the party leadership and rule changes and like agreement to like talk about some policies, but like the stuff they ran on for advocating isn't actually within their scope to convince anyone of, because they exist in this giant party machine. So they're not even getting the manifesto or like American political parties don't really have manifestos in the same way like European individual. Anyway, like they don't have like the party leadership saying they want something. Like they can enact change so slowly in a way, but actually a more fragmented political system actually might be better for them, because it would mean they would have a bigger platform and a perceived like actual voice of multiple people at once.
So I agree. I very much agree, but I'm just going to say that the Italian situation is slightly worse.
Yeah.
Because unlike the American situation, the Italian situation doesn't seem to, like, the left within the party membership of the PD and like the people who come from this and the membership and support that comes from this like history of the literal communist party, not like a center-left party, which makes up the bulk of where this party is, like, or what this party like is in terms of membership.
Yeah,
don't even have those like junior Congress.
Yeah. So yeah, the divide between like party organizers and members and actual like message of the party is even more different. I get that. There's the it's all terrible. No, it's all good. It'll be fine. But I think the Italian left need to mobilize in some way. Or not even the Italian left. The Italian, like, non-crazy people need to organize in some sort
of way. They tried that. They tried making a party for just the non-crazy people. And everyone hates them.
I think you could have, like... But this is my point. If you didn't have a Big Ten party, then you could have both. There'd be some baseline support for the centrist, no crazy people party, and then you'd have a baseline support for the left-wing party that has like things that they want to do, and they could form some sort of coalition, let's say, and then they would compromise between those two. And then you could form a government of compromise between those two viewpoints, as opposed, and get and end up with some sort of center-left party, as opposed to the PD, which is a giant blob that says nothing. It's the same thing. This is like my perception of what like Schulz and the SPD ended up doing was like Schulz would say things on the campaign trail. People would be like, that's a really interesting policy idea. It's a shame that like what Schulz is saying in his speeches in no way represents what the SPD's election manifesto was going to say, because there's no majority in his party for that policy. So it's not going to happen. So like effectively he would say things to crowds that everyone would then agree later, oh, but we're not going to do that. And everyone would know that.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, sure, it'll be fine. I'm not worried about it.
In other news, Venice is drowning, but whatever.
Yeah, that's not really... I wouldn't say that's, like, you know, anyone's fault in Italy.
Well, the important thing is they really seem on the ball.
Yeah.
In terms of dealing with it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool, so I think that's probably a wrap for this week. As always, if you enjoy the podcast, we're on Twitter. We're at Prev in Europe. We have an email account, which you can always email, and we will either respond to you via email or address your question on the podcast. It's previouslyineurope@gmail.com. We have a Facebook group. It's if you search Previously in Europe, it's a group. You just have to click join group, and we will say yes to that. Kieran has some t-shirt designs on our Tee Public store, which will be available in the show notes, and there's a link on our website. I won't read out the URL because that might change. That has some terrifying designs on it so far, which I myself have purchased already, and I strongly like them. And yeah. Basically their proceeds go to paying for hosting this podcast, and you know, that's basically it. So yeah, thanks for listening.
Woo!